Now it's time for our weekly chat with Labor MP Andrew Little.
Recently you met with Ngāti Maru in Taranaki. What was discussed there?
They've had their claim being negotiated. We signed an agreement in principle at the end of last year over the loss of their lands, the loss of their people. I mean, they are an iwi that was genuinely devastated by the confiscations of the Raupatu and by the impact of colonisation on them. So their population was heavily decreased. They lost a lot of land. So it was an opportunity to go into their area, Te Arohe, and talk to them on their terms just about the impact of historical events on them. It was a very compelling presentation, and it was great to be in the area.
Now, how important is it for you personally to sort of, as Treaty Negotiations Minister, to get a feeling behind just how devastating the loss was?
Look, to do the job, you need to face up to people and talk to them in their places, in the areas surrounding them that have had such an impact on them. And I think one of the important aspects of Māori culture is that oral tradition, oral historical tradition. That's how they relay the events that have happened to them and the impact of events on them. So it's important, I think, to hear that from them and from their people, and to hear it in a way that they have learned about the history of their iwi, of their hapū, and get a true understanding of it.
Because how bad was the land confiscation in this case?
Well, it was huge. There was the Taranaki confiscations, and in fact right over to the central North Island, were significant. Hundreds of thousands of hectares of land just taken by kind of government fiat, and then told, well, if you want to bid for it, then you can. But of course, these were people with no means to do so, and so a lot of the land was then turned over either to private owners, to European settlers, or just held by the Crown. A lot of it's now as part of the Dock Estate. I think we respect that, but they are searching for the means to restore their kind of economic base, their economic well-being, and their mana whenua, their mana motuhake, which is the spirit that is so important to them.
And Ngāti Maru and the Crown recently reached a $30 million settlement. Has this been accepted by the iwi, or is there still parts of it that need to be talked over?
You know, there's still a lot of detail to work through. So what the stages of a treaty settlement, the first point of agreement is what we call an agreement in principle. So we talk about the money, we talk about lands that they have a claim on, that they might be able to get back, other sort of cultural matters. Then there's the detailed work about how all this is going to work practically. That leads to a deed that is then initialled, and the final detail is worked through till you get to a deed of settlement. So we're now working through the detail of the agreement in principle, and that involves locating land that might be returned, or the purchase of land that could be funded out of the $30 million agreed payment.
So is a lot of this land held in private hands?
No, I mean, one of the principles of treaty settlements is we don't seek to... Sorry, that's not quite correct. We can purchase privately held land on an open market, willing buyer, willing seller basis. Otherwise, there is land owned by the Crown that can be returned to iwi, but that is seen as an offset against, that's valued, and then it's an offset against the money that has been agreed that they would be paid.
Are there any particularly sort of sticky points?
The difficulty for Ngāti Maru is there is very little land available in the area, Crown-owned land, that could be returned. So we're kind of working our way through that. And then, one of the very serious impacts on them is because they had such a loss of population, is a loss of their kind of tikanga for their particular iwi, and their language and their dialect. And so there will be initiatives about restoring that and reaching out to the descendants of their people who dispersed far and wide to restore or rebuild that Ngāti Maru identity.
How important is it that the history behind these settlements are understood, that we don't just kind of look at the settlement and say, yeah, that's it, we need to kind of recognise what happened?
Yeah, like, it's a really good question. I think it's a big challenge for us as a country. I find myself now saying, when I meet with iwi and stand up in front of their people, just how privileged I feel about the history of New Zealand that I'm getting and learning about, that certainly I never learned in school and actually haven't read much about either. And it's a much kind of deeper, richer history than anything I've heard or read before. And I sit there thinking, you know, more people should know this. So I think, and I've started raising with officials and across government, saying we're going to have to think about a way that we get these stories told so that all New Zealanders understand why, you know, why treaty settlements are so important to Māori, to various iwi, why they hold out for so long for justice, and why we still have a long journey to walk before we can say that justice has been truly done.
Hopefully that happens soon. So Sheikh Abdullah bin Zayed Al Nahyan recently visited New Zealand. What was the purpose of his visit?
He's the Foreign Affairs Minister for the United Arab Emirates. He's a bit of a fan of New Zealand, so he's been out here before. He holidays out here, but he's had a couple of official days of activity here. So he's meeting our Foreign Minister, Winston Peters, he's meeting the Prime Minister, he's meeting other ministers. The UAE, when I was up there earlier this year, I met with a number of their ministers. They have a particular interest in New Zealand because we're a small country, a bit like them. They are very interested in our education system, interested in our response to, you know, the challenge of climate change. But the significance for me is the personal connection that goes between our two fathers. So my father was a British Army officer posted to parts of what is now the UAE in the mid-1950s. And he worked with Sheikh Abdullah's father, who was Sheikh Zayed, and who then later became the first president of the UAE. Sheikh Zayed was a very formidable sort of character. My father formed a very good friendship with him and worked with Sheikh Zayed to stop the Saudis sort of taking a lot of land that was very oil rich. So he had an important role to play. So, and my father and the Sheikh Abdullah's father maintained their friendship. My father, after he retired teaching, had a number of trips up to the UAE and re-established the friendship. So it's been good to kind of restore the family connection, which was kind of part of his engagement with me while he's been out in New Zealand.
Certainly a small world.
Yeah.
The United Arab Emirates doesn't have the greatest human rights record. It's not signed up to most international human rights treaties. Did this come up at all?
I spoke about that when I was there in February. I think what we're seeing now is that there is a younger generation of leadership now in the United Arab Emirates, and we're seeing in Saudi Arabia, actually, as they sort of come to terms with, I think, the worldwide regard for some of those more westernised Middle Eastern states, and an expectation that they will modernise some of their attitudes. So in Saudi Arabia, you know, the new leader there very quickly overturned the ban on women driving and things like that. And the UAE, yeah, they do have a checkered record. They have been really highly dependent on overseas labour to come and, you know, do a lot of the work there, a lot of the construction, a lot of the agricultural sort of work. And they haven't been treated well. And I think they are now realising that as they engage with the rest of the world much more actively as they are doing, that they've got to, you know, do their bit on worldwide human rights.
That was Labour MP Andrew Little. The Wire.